From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 209, recorded live Thursday, April 1st, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with HeadSpring Systems CTO Jeffrey Palermo.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today I've got Jeffrey Palermo, CTO at HeadSpring Systems, and author of a book on ASP.NET MVC, specifically ASP.NET MVC in Action. How's it going, Jeffrey?
Good. Thanks for having me, Scott.
So you work on an open source project called MVC Contrib. And you guys have been doing this for a while. Who all's on this project?
Well, the project's about 2 years old, and Eric Hexter and I are the co-founders. And we actually started about 5 days after the first CTP of the MVC framework was launched. And we've had multiple contributors from HeadSpring Systems, individual Tim Scott, and then Jeremy Skinner, our most active committer. And they're the main guys. And now we have our first Microsoft committer, David Ebo, with the T for MVC stuff. So it's about 2 years old, and it's it has quite a bit of a history. The source code's been in three different places, and now it's finally found a home at the Coplex Foundation.
Cool. So tell me, what is the whole contrib kind of vibe? You always see a project, and then you see that project contrib. So there's like NAT contrib and this MVC contrib. Is that a tradition in software to come up with a contrib version of a commercial project?
I don't know the actual source or who made the first contrib project, but going back to even when I first started working with open source libraries in the .NET 1.0 days, I always worked with NAT contrib and then in Hibernate contrib. And so when we were looking for a name, we thought, you know, it's not about being a new open source library. It's about reinforcing and enhancing the experience with an existing library. So it's not about creating a brand new identity. It's about bolstering and strengthening the existing identity, which is ASP.NET MVC.
So it's not about, like, sometimes I describe MVC contrib as the project that has all of the stuff that, you know, that we wish we had the time to put into MVC. Isn't that the case?
I'd love for the team at Microsoft to actually think about it that way. And actually, over the past 2 years, there's been code that we have deleted because ASP.NET MVC version 2 was able to incorporate some of the ideas. And so, you know, deleting code is always fun.
Yeah, refactoring via subtraction.
Exactly. Accomplish the goal with the least amount of code possible, the least amount of software possible.
Are there things in MVC contrib that are just copied from another project and like they live, like it's like a small open source project now has a home inside MVC contrib? Or is it a collection? Or are there things in MVC contrib that there are only in there?
There are things, what most of MVC contrib is are unique things that they started there and that's the only place that they are. MVC contrib is not a standalone library. In other words, you wouldn't use MVC contrib just by itself and say, oh, I'm creating an MVC contrib application. That just doesn't make sense. You would be creating an ASP.NET MVC application, and then you would leverage the MVC contrib library for some extra goodness. Now, a few years ago, when it first started, we received some contributions of adaptations to the InVelocity view engine adapted for ASP.NET MVC, the Braille view engine, and then an XSLT transform view engine. And those were really interesting early ideas, and they were contributed. And they haven't received a whole lot of traction. InVelocity and Braille came over from the ASP.NET adaptations that were already in Monorail. And so it was, since they already worked with ASP.NET, it was pretty easy to just adapt them for MVC. But MVC version 2, to correspond with ASP.NET MVC version 2, we've deprecated the extra view engines just because we haven't found that people have been using them.
So you deprecated something just because it didn't get a lot of support? Isn't there like some person out there who like really cares about that?
Moreover, we don't have a committer who is maintaining them. So even to upgrade them, we don't have anyone in the community who is maintaining those. So while they are still available, and you can still get builds that do support those, they're not actively being maintained. And so we put them out on the MVC 1 branch, but for MVC version 2 and going forward, we don't have a volunteer in the community who stepped up and says, yeah, I'll maintain those for the project.
Mm-hmm. When you run an open source project like this, and I would it be fair to say that you're kind of the coordinator at this point?
I would say that I am one of the faces of MVC Contrib, and at this point, probably in Microsoft speak, a evangelist. And I would say that Eric Hexter is the actual coordinator of moving things around and coordinating the actual tactical actions of the project itself. Now, in my dual role as MVC Contrib co-founder and also leading the practice here at Headspring, we contribute lots of features directly from Headspring staff through patches to some of the MVC Contrib committers. And in that role, I'll sort of give direction that, you know what, we need these features in MVC Contrib, or we need these features to make it to MVC Contrib. And so I'll give direction that way. But I've got to give credit to Eric Hexter as being the real coordinator, the overall coordinator for the project itself.
Where does Eric work? And the reason I ask is that it seems that with all open source projects, you know, these all really good successful ones, they succeed the most when someone has a commercial interest in getting them to work. Like, you know, you're using MVC Contrib at your company. Is it fair to say Eric's probably doing the same thing at his?
That is fair to say, because Eric works at Headspring.
Aha. It all comes around. So if I'm a community member, how do I know that MVC Contrib isn't just a Headspring product as opposed to, you know, a real vibrant open source project?
Well, that's part of the decision to contribute all the intellectual property to the CodePlex Foundation. Now, even though both Eric and I are at Headspring, and yes, we do use MVC Contrib on client projects, just like we use other open source projects like InHibernate and Nance and InUnit, Tim Scott is another committer who is not at Headspring. Now, he does live in Austin, Texas, so we see him, you know, face-to-face quite frequently, and he comes to the Austin.net user group. And Jeremy Skinner is our most active committer and documenter, and he lives in the UK. So it's not a one-way Headspring track. We certainly give leadership to it, but it's more broad, and we have our first Microsoft committer, David Ebo. So the project is now part of the CodePlex Foundation. It does not have any intellectual property left rooted at Headspring, or actually in me or Eric or Tim or Jeremy as individuals. The intellectual property and the ownership now resides with the CodePlex Foundation. We are still leading the MVC Contrib project in the direction that we think it should go, but there's an active mailing list with lots of people using it that also are asking questions and helping each other out and giving their opinions about what the direction of MVC Contrib should go. So I think it's really turned out to be a great, vibrant, open source project, and it is definitely not a one-company operation.
Mm-hmm. So for those people who are listening who may not be familiar, there's CodePlex, or what Sam Ramji calls the Forge, codeplex.com, which is the place that you host your projects. And then there's codeplex.org, which is a nonprofit external foundation that it kind of helps projects be used. It's basically a Microsoft jump-started foundation that's now entirely independent of Microsoft that helps projects be used by commercial software. So you're saying that you donated MVC Contrib to the CodePlex Foundation?
Yes, and we rounded up the surprisingly thick stack of paperwork required for all the current committers, as well as me and my capacity as Headspring, saying that Headspring as a company does not claim any ownership. We hereby grant, you know, yada, yada, all the stuff over. And then Tim Scott, Jeremy Skinner individually, me individually, Eric individually, and then everyone who has contributed a patch. We've kept contact information on them.
Wow.
And when you contribute a patch through codeplex.com, there's verbiage that already helps out that says, hey, I'm contributing this patch. I don't retain ownership. I hereby contribute this patch. Here, click the button. So that helps out with that. But yes, there's official paperwork that says any intellectual property that would be assigned to me is now assigned to the Codeplex Foundation.
Was that pretty difficult? I mean, was it worth the trouble? I mean, that sounds like a big deal. Gosh. Every single person that ever did a patch.
No, every single person that ever did a patch didn't have to do that paperwork, because Codeplex.com has a patch submission process which has a legal disclaimer.
Ah.
That helped out a lot.
Really?
It really did. Because when you submit a patch, you agree to the terms of submitting that patch, and it's attached to your user ID. And the terms are that you're contributing this patch and the intellectual property that goes along with it. Normal U.S. copyright law would say that even though you gave someone the code, the intellectual property for that code would still reside with the person who created it. And so the disclaimer, you know, officially says, I am hereby giving my intellectual property, my copyright, and I am not laying claim to it.
Wow. It sounds like one more reason to read your EULAs when you click agree on something on the web.
Right. But you know, that's the purpose of the Codeplex.com, is to facilitate open source libraries. And in the open source mindset, when you contribute something to a project, in your mind you're not thinking, "Oh, I'm contributing this code to the project so that later on, if this project is successful, I can try to get some money out of it because it's some of my intellectual property, and then go after all the commercial companies and end up using this open source project." That's not your mindset. And so there's some legal maneuvers that are necessary in order to jive the open source mindset with the legal reality. And I think that's the value of the Codeplex Foundation.
So when you suggested this idea to like the team, they thought it was a good one, or was it a hard sell?
You know, it was a surprisingly easy sell. At the Monospace conference in Austin this past October, some of the Codeplex Foundation guys were there, and Eric and I spoke with them and said, you know, what would it take to get MVC contributed to Codeplex Foundation? We were very interested in being one of the first non-Microsoft funded open source projects. What's your roadmap? And at that point, they didn't have the procedures completely fleshed out about how they would accept projects. But, you know, we worked with them to get their process in place. They had a board meeting. Mm-hmm. They approved MVC Contrib. We met the criteria. And furthermore, the first funded gallery in Codeplex Foundation is the ASP.NET gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And ASP.NET Ajax was the first project contributed. And so it just so happened that a gallery was funded in the Codeplex Foundation that was a very good home for MVC Contrib. Now, if this project was geared towards, SQL Server, an open source SQL Server project,
mm-hmm.
then we probably wouldn't be in the Codeplex Foundation, because there is not a SQL Server gallery that has funding, but there is an ASP.NET gallery.
I see. I guess at least not yet.
Not yet, exactly, not yet. And we met the other criteria, for instance, being active for a demonstrable, reasonable period of time, having so many committers, so much activity.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're a one-man open source project and you spin something up and you throw some code out there, that doesn't quite meet the criteria for entrance into the Codeplex Foundation.
I see.
You have to demonstrate that you have a life, and the life of the open source project is not directly tied to the single founder. In other words, if the single founder sort of walked away,
mm-hmm.
would the open source project flounder, or is there a community around it that would keep it going?
Right. You know, and that's actually something that I've called in the past the bus factor, which is, what's the bus factor on a project? What are the chances that someone gets hit by a bus and this project falls apart?
Right. And I can safely say that if I went away Even if Eric Hexter went away, this project would keep going.
Well, that's pretty cool, because that's one of the things that people wonder about. They want to know if the project falls apart, who's going to step up? And nothing is sadder than an open source project that's really been abandoned.
Right, right. But at the same time, success for an open source project is only defined by the goals of the founder. And we can't be quick to say that if an open source project is only used by one or two people and only maintained by one person, then it's not a real open source project. Our definition of success is not everyone's definition of success for their open source project. Some people are fine saying, no, I'm not going to let anyone contribute to it, but I'll give my work away for free. And someone contributes a patch and says, no, I don't want your patch. Now, it's their definition, and it's up to the founder. And so when you get to the foundation level, when you have communities around these open source projects, we've sort of all gone in the same direction. However, the open source ecosystem and community is so broad, I don't think you can say one thing about it that's uniform across every single open source project. In fact, I don't think we'll ever be able to have a catalog of every open source project, because some open source projects, the founder just doesn't advertise. The founder doesn't care about advertising. Maybe his friends up and down his own block are the extent of the advertising that he does.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman from another parallel universe. Got to tell you about some of our things our sponsors are doing. They make this free podcast possible. If you're developing a new line of business application, you've probably tried the latest version of Silverlight. Now you can get even better results by combining the functionality in Silverlight 4 beta with some of the richness of the third-party controls from our friends at Telerik. They're the first vendors to offer native support for the Silverlight 4 beta and their RAD controls. They've got a new Silverlight 4 CTP suite of these controls. They let you tap into the framework's great potential. You get native right mouse click and all the new features of Silverlight. There's 38 controls that give you all these features. You can start building those compelling line of business applications right away. I encourage you to check those products out at Telerik.com/Silverlight. And, thank Telerik for supporting .NET Rocks, supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page at Facebook.com/Telerik. Now back to the show. So let's shift a little bit and walk me through some of the things that are inside of MVC Contrib that I might want to use.
Sure. So first and foremost, I'm saying this first because it's so important, would be the UI testing. There is a UI testing wrapper and adapter around and initially implemented over the Watton library that makes it very easy to create UI tests. And by UI tests, I mean really full system tests or just UI tests for your web apps running ASP.NET MVC, where it opens up Internet Explorer, it types in the text boxes, clicks the buttons, and then asserts the right thing happened. The assembly is called mvc-contrib.testhelper, and it has a really easy syntax over Watton's that makes it a little bit easier to use. It also has an interface called iBrowser Driver, and Watton is currently the only implementation of that interface, mm-hmm. but another implementation that's in the works is over the LTAF framework, the Lightweight Test Automation Framework from actually the QA team of ASP.NET MVC.
How does this work exactly? When you say UI testing, I think of someone automating a browser and clicking for me. I think of like the coded UI test in Visual Studio 2010 or Water or Watton or things like that. How is this different?
Right. Right. It absolutely is automating the tests. It's making a test script that you would run in a test runner like InUnit or MS Test or MBUnit. Mm-hmm. And when the test runs, it would interact with it and open up Internet Explorer, navigate to the page in question, click the right links, select things in a drop-down menu, click a button, go to another page, and literally you can automate a test of placing an order in an e-commerce ASP.NET application. And so you can what we use it for at Headspring is for full system testing for ASP.NET apps. Then ASP.NET MVC apps. It can work with web forms, but it works the best with MVC.
And it is automating the browser?
It is. It opens up Internet Explorer.
Okay.
It types in the text boxes and it clicks the buttons. You can stand back, you can sit back in your chair and watch it run. And it's just a robot.
Is this a new implementation of something? Like, hasn't that been done before with, like, again, like with Water, which is web application testing in Ruby or Watton, or did you bring Watton into your project?
Oh, this has been done over and over again. This is just making it work very easily with the MVC framework.
Ah, I see.
So the actual implementation of driving the browser DOM is Watton.
Uh-huh.
Or LTAF, depending on which one you're using.
I see.
The test helper is an abstraction over whichever, you know, browser driving library you choose.
Mm-hmm.
It could conceptually be Selenium or Cucumber or whatever, but it's an abstraction over that to make it very easy to do the testing for MVC apps.
I see. So you've put help on both sides to make sure. So it's not just an entirely client-side browser driving solution. There's something on the back end that's helping?
It's part of the library that's helping you author the test scripts.
Okay. But you don't have to change your application. It'll work just as before.
Right. You do not have to change your application. However, if you don't have test surfaces already designed into your application as a part of the application architecture,
mm-hmm.
then it's going to be more difficult to test it. Just like in a modern automobile, when you go to the dealership, there is a plug-in, a jack that they're going to connect the computer to, and it's a diagnostic port, and they can get error codes and other information directly from the engine. And you, as the user, you don't care about that whatsoever. That's purely for testing, purely for diagnostics. But it was engineered into the car because that's so important. There are specific pins on an Intel microprocessor that are only for testing. And it gives visibility under the covers. And so this same principle has been applied in lots of other types of engineering. And it behooves us as software engineers to put it in our applications, because if our applications really only provide the end user interface as a surface for testing, then we're at a handicap when we're trying to write these automated test scripts. And so in our client projects, you know, we leave certain spots open as purely test surfaces, and it makes authoring those tests so much easier.
Okay. So one of the other things that's inside of MVC Contrib is something called portable areas. Well, how is that different from the areas feature in MVC 2?
Right. So portable areas is an add-on to the areas feature itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a replacement. It basically takes a MVC 2 area and makes it a component model. It makes it distributable as a single DLL. You take the area, package it up, and then, in other words, one of the samples in MVC Contrib that you can get to if you download the code from MVCContrib.org, you can go into source and samples and go into a portable areas sample, and it essentially has a RSS widget helper. And there's an RSS widget controller, and there's a view, and it takes any RSS feed that you want, and it formats it nicely on a page. And that is its own area. And the portable areas capability allows you to package that up into a single DLL. I can hand it to you. You can do add reference RSS widget portable area into your application. You instantly have a new HTML helper available on your views. You can say HTML.RSS, pass in the string of the RSS feed, and then instantly you have a what amounts to a partial view pop right in that section, formatted nicely with the contents of that RSS feed. And to you, it looked like a simple HTML helper,
mm-hmm.
but the implementation was an entire area. Now, the second thing that's interesting about this is that areas register new routes. And so by adding a reference to a new portable area, and then in your global ASAX, just registering all areas, the MVC framework automatically discovers all the areas that are in your bin folder or that are in the assemblies that the app domain has loaded.
Right.
So now you have the portable area loaded into your app domain. It'll find the area, it'll register the routes automatically, and you can instantly have 10 or 20 brand new pages active on your site right away. So if you think about it, something that's not implemented now, but I think would be great if someone wanted to try their hand at it, take an open source forum or discussion group, open source project that's for ASP.NET, and package it up as an MVC2 area, and then layer on the portable on top of it and distribute it as a single DLL, add reference, boom, you instantly have a discussion group on your ASP.NET site.
That's cool. Would you say that that's the most exciting part of MVC Contrib, portable areas?
The most exciting part of MVC Contrib? Gosh, you know, it's pretty well up there.
Yeah?
It's pretty well up there. Because MVC2 isn't exciting just by itself. It's exciting because it's such an open framework. It doesn't say, no. Here's the framework, and you as the human fit yourself into the pieces of it, and you put your code here and nowhere else. It says, no, here's all the different ways that we can help you put together the web application that you want to, and then where you want to go further, you extend it, and there's hooks for that. And the same thing with MVC Contrib, there's a lot of places that are just extensions for particular hooks, like the controller factories, mm-hmm. HTML helpers, there's view data extensions, where view data you have to access with string keys. Well, the view data extensions makes it where you can use a generic parameter instead of string keys so that you have fewer string literals in your views in the controllers. Mm-hmm. And so little things like that just make working with the MVC framework a little more desirable. But probably if I were to pick a most exciting feature of MVC Contrib, I would have to pick the input builders.
Okay, what's an input builder?
So MVC Contrib came out with input builders before the MVC2 roadmap was put out there. And so it is similar to the MVC2 templated helpers. And the vision is that you can describe your view with the view model, and then using conventions, the views can be drawn automatically for you. Now, it's interesting because this sort of goes, it seems at the surface level, to go against some of the original marketing of the MVC framework was you're going to have absolute complete control over your markup.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the Microsoft selling feature. You're going to have control over your markup. You're going to be closer to the HTML.
Right.
Whereas what we actually didn't want that per se. We build input builders because we didn't want to have to write the HTML. Now, we wanted absolute control over what it would be,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't want to write it all. We wanted it to be written for us because HTML is, kind of low level. It's repetitive.
Wouldn't you say that input builders were an attempt to keep things dry, right? Don't repeat yourself?
Yes. Perhaps we're going to have tons of input type equals text all over the application. How can I have input type equals text only specified once in the code that I contribute to my version control system? That's essentially the problem. So, input builders is a runtime code generator for HTML. And it's very similar to web forms controls when you say the goal is for it to decide to write HTML. But web forms controls don't really have a good convention model where you can say, every time I see this, I want you to choose ASP colon text box.
Mm-hmm.
Or every time you see this, I want you to choose ASP colon dropdown. That's what the input builders do. If we see if we see an enum or a type that we know to be enumerated in our application, we can create a simple convention class that says, evaluate the property. When you see it to be this, use our dropdown builder,
mm-hmm.
which uses HTML dot dropdown list, and then it passes in the select list, and it can put together the list from the enumeration, or if it's lookup data in the database, it'll go and grab that automatically. And anytime the view model is a particular type that we know to be enumerated,
mm-hmm.
we automatically get the dropdown populated with the right pieces.
Okay.
And same goes with lots of other types of elements.
So how is that different from the display for and editor for templates in MVC2? Is it complementary or is it just another option?
Good question. And I don't know this for sure, but the input builders sufficiently preceded the roadmap for MVC 2 that we hope some of the inspiration from it, you know, made it in. And MVC Contrib has been refactored, i.e. code deleted, since MVC 2 has come out with the templated helpers, because there was some overlap. For instance, investigating the view model to decide what to do at the highest level, you know, HTML.form for model just enumerates every property in your view model and then spits them all out. Mm-hmm. That mechanism is the same. Using the data annotations, that was something we refactored to. But the piece that is really important is the conventions structure. There is no way in templated helpers that I can say, for this application, if you have, let's just say, if the property ends with, a password suffix, okay, like initial password and then confirm password. Let's say that those are two properties. With the templated helpers, it would, you know, you could annotate it with a attribute that, you know, says, hey, use a password. But if everywhere in my site I said, you know, I just want this convention that says, if the property name ends with password, I want you to use HTML.password, then instantly for the entire site, that's the way it is. So it's site-level conventions, whereas the templated helpers really focus on the individual view. And adding conventions on top of that really enable removing a lot of duplication that you would place as attributes in your view model.
Okay. It is an opinionated framework, isn't it, MVC Contrib? I mean that in a positive way, right? I mean, it puts some opinions in the ground, puts a stake in the ground and said, this is what we believe in.
It does, and I think that is a positive regardless of what the opinion is. And there's a sufficiently large number of libraries, both commercial and open source, that you know, there's enough opinions, you can choose the one that you agree with. But the one thing the MVC Contrib also does, it doesn't lock you into using all the features. In other words, you can pick and choose the features you want to use, and they're sufficiently standalone. You don't say, oh, are you building an MVC application, or are you building an MVC plus MVC Contrib? You know, it's not an all or none proposition. So if, for instance, you don't like the input builders, you can still use a lot of the other features without input builders. But before we move on to another topic, the other big, big win of the input builders is that it leverages partial-based master pages.
Partial-based, right? Master pages, okay.
If you think about it, the view engine mechanism of the MVC framework does not care if the partial is a view page or a view user control, right?
Okay.
View user controls in ASP.NET do not have the capability of having a master page. View pages, however, do. And view master pages can be infinitely nested. So what we've done is go with the convention that every view, every partial view that is the implementation of an input builder. For instance, there is a partial for a text box. There is a partial for a drop-down list. There is a partial for checkbox list. Now, inside those partials, you know, all it does is delegate back to the MVC framework and use, you know, display for and editor for and all the built-in stuff. It just layers onto the built-in stuff. But the input builders is partial-based, partial view-based, and all the partials are implemented as view pages, and so each of those view pages can have a master page that's also convention-based, so that I can say, you know what? In this application, I want my label, and then I want a colon, and then I want the input element, and then I want the validation, and then I want an example, if there is an example. And I can lay out how I want the field to be. Now, the templated helpers right off the bat sort of say, okay, we're gonna have just a label or just a couple of things. Your application can override the master page, because all we're doing is searching for a view master page by name. So you can put in a ViewMaster page by that name in your shared folder, and boom, you've overridden the default, and you can add certain elements. If you wanted to add a little image with a question mark for extra help on each individual field, you would add that in the field level master page, and that would be applied to every field throughout the entire site, because every partial is a page, and the pages have the master page.
Hmm. This is pretty cool stuff you guys are doing.
Yeah, it really did eliminate a large set of duplicated markup mm-hmm. that would otherwise be in the views, because XML and HTML are not object-oriented. C# is.
Keeping it dry with MVC Contrib.
That's right.
So you've got a book now called ASP.NET MVC in Action, and you can get all the links to stuff like that at Jeffrey's blog at jeffreypalermo.com. That book is from Manning at manning.com/palermo, and we'll put all those links in the show notes. Thanks a lot for sitting down and chatting with me today, Jeffrey.
Thanks a lot for having me.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.